Hello there, and welcome to How Middle Class Are You? This is a talk given at the summer school on the theme of the class divide in August 2022. And what you're hearing now is a re-recording due to technical issues. But I think that might work out for the best anyway, because when the talk was actually given at the summer school, it involved going through a website, an online quiz with the rest of the people in the room. And that wouldn't really lend itself to listening to without seeing the screen. So this is a slightly amended text, which takes into account and hopefully explains, so it's clear enough to listener to afterwards, what I just referred to. Anyway, to start with the talk, the economic realities behind how we live are filtered through our perceptions and what kind of framework we use to understand society. Of course, there are many different frameworks around, and the two-class explanation of capitalism used by the Socialist Party isn't as mainstream as we'd prefer. So I'll be talking about some of the other frameworks to understand class which are out there, and those which accept that there's a middle class. These frameworks tend to be misleading and rather demeaning, but where they come from has made them very influential in how people understand class. As much of what I'll be discussing will be about definitions, here's a reminder of some basic terms. As we know, the bourgeoisie in capitalism is the minority class who own the means of production, contrasted with the working class who don't. The word bourgeoisie literally means town dwellers. The first syllable, bourge, ultimately derives from burg, which means town in Old Frankish, which is a West Germanic language. This passed into Old French, where it was joined to the other syllables, oisie, to give the overall word bourgeoisie and the overall meaning of town dweller. The term petty bourgeoisie is also French, with petty meaning small, rather than petty, as in pedantic, you know, alternative spelling, alternative word. But if you misunderstood the etymology, you'd think petty bourgeoisie translated as small-minded town dweller, which could be a starting point to define the middle class. But really, of course, the term petty bourgeoisie means a smaller version of a member of the bourgeoisie. It includes owners of small and medium-sized businesses. And although they get their income from exploiting their staff, they in turn get exploited by the big bourgeoisie, especially the financial sector. So petty bourgeoisie refers to a group which has a particular relationship to the means of production. And over the years, the term has also come to include people employed in highly skilled and well-paid professions, such as doctors, engineers, architects, lawyers, and in management. Because they've got some financial capital and also intellectual capital behind them, the petty bourgeoisie tend to have a bit more security and home comforts than those who have what could be called average jobs. But they're still working within a context of alienated labour and are subject to the vagaries of the capitalist economy. So overall, the petty bourgeoisie can be grouped in with the working class, as the vast majority who are on the rough end of capitalism. The term petty bourgeoisie isn't used much in everyday discourse, and people instead refer to the middle class. And the definition of middle class, which many people carry around in their heads, doesn't only refer to an economic role, though. The term middle class also refers to, you know, having a comfortable lifestyle and reasonably highbrow pastimes. Similarly, the term upper class also suggests a particular lifestyle involving country estates, private yachts, debauchery and moral depravity. And working class lifestyles can be lazily thought of as what you see in soap operas and trashy documentaries. Underpinning these colloquial understandings of class is an assumption that our particular role in the employment hierarchy means that we're more likely to have particular interests and tastes. This assumption has partly come about because our tastes and interests are, to some extent, shaped by what we can afford to buy. An easy test of someone's income is what kind of holiday they go on. with the starting point of whether they can even afford a yearly break. 3 weeks on safari in Kenya suggests a different amount of disposable income to a long weekend in Weston-super-Mare. Another test would be to check shopping trolleys. One containing avocados and asparagus is likely to be pushed around by someone who can afford more than just the basics. The more money we have to spend on commodities, the more relevant we are to shops, manufacturers, and also advertisers. As the advertising industry developed during the 20th century, it sought to more precisely hone how it marketed products to us consumers. One way which the advertising industry has done this is to classify consumers into categories. Understanding the demographics of the population means that the advertisers can learn which groups would be more likely to be able to buy a particular product. An important milestone in the history of advertising was a classification system devised in the mid-1950s. The NRS social grade system was put together through a joint venture between advertisers and publishers in the UK. They carried out what was called the National Readership Survey, hence NRS, among the readers of the most prominent magazines, asking them questions about their employment status. I don't think that readers of the Socialist Standard at the time were consulted. The data was then used to classify the non-upper class into categories running from A to E. Our grading is based on occupation, or that of the head of the household when the survey was first produced. Those relying on pensions or benefits are E grades. Grades D and C2 are unskilled and skilled manual workers. And manual workers are all working class, and all working class people are manual workers in this system. Grades A, B and C1 are defined as the upper, middle and lower sections of the middle class. And having more disposable income than others, this middle class was of particular interest. The original purpose of this classification system was to enable the researchers to determine what type of people read particular magazines. This data enabled advertisers to place adverts in the magazines whose readers were the most likely receptive audiences for their products. An obvious example, which probably didn't need to be confirmed through the NRS social grade system, is that expensive clothes would be best advertised in a magazine like Vogue, which is likely to be read by people with enough money to buy pricey clobber. Through the second half of the 20th century, the NRS social grade system became widely used among advertisers as the basis from which their campaigns would start. It has also become incorporated into the national census, which is carried out every 10 years. A new version was devised by the Office of National Statistics in 2001, which blurred the distinction between manual and office workers and introduced categories such as the vague intermediate occupations. In 2016, according to the original version, the middle class comprised 55% of the non-capitalist population, and the working class were 45%. The NRS social grade system isn't the only attempt to classify classes which has come from a market research. Just under 20 years ago, a marketing agency called Fish Can Sing carried out a study published as the Class of 2004. This was prompted when they found that in conversations with their clients, they couldn't find the right words to describe groups of consumers they wanted to target. The NRS social grade system wasn't precise enough for them. Furthermore, they found that asking people to self-identify their class was misleading, because as more people came to fit the traditional definition of middle class, the more they were likely to define themselves as working class. Around the time that Fish Can Sing's research, market researchers Mintel found that 68% of people described themselves as working class, and that's a proportion which has been steadily increasing since the 1950s. To socialists, this offers a glimmer of hope in that it suggests more people are accepting a realistic definition of working class. But to advertisers, this upsets the pigeonholes they like to put people in when dividing them up into demographics to target. The marketing agency's Class of 2004 report aimed to come up with a new set of terms to describe what they saw as the middle class. These terms were derived from research by a team of writers and social observers interviewing people across Britain over a year. Participants were asked about their values, both their economic value measured by job and income, and their personal values and attitudes. In a contemporary article for the Guardian newspaper, the editors of the report, Richard Benson and Alex Bilmes is the spelling. Apologies to Alex for mispronouncing his name. Anyway, the editors of the report said, quote, "The most striking thing we found was the way in which the middle class is fragmenting as it grows. True, the expansion of higher education, property ownership, and service sector employment has created a huge, economically powerful new class that is linked by a set of vague values. Its members tend to be ambitious, whereas their parents are more interested in security. Suspicious of authority rather than trusting, vaguely liberal and meritocratic rather than politically aligned, and prone to judging people on the basis of birth, accent, and profession. The new middle classes are keen to project a love of fashion, football, pop music, and television. They suffer from hubristic tendencies and a misplaced sense of entitlement. They watch their weight and think about their hairstyles a lot." End quote. The researchers believe that the middle class defined this way was larger than the group they defined as the working class. Benson and Bilmes went on to say, quote, "As middle class consumer choice has expanded, so we have been enthusiastically inventing new prejudices to separate ourselves into new consumer tribes." End quote. So, their research led to the invention of 10 types of middle-class person, which don't seem to have taken off in the intervening years. The categories they came up with sound like templates for sitcom characters, more than anything. There are the alt-dot-middles. Quote, "These are people whose qualifications and income put them in a middle-class bracket, who are generally kind and decent folk at heart, but who find that all the different types of modern middle-class person repel them more or less equally." End quote. This group voted Labour in 1997 and became disillusioned with Blairism and believe, quote, "Anything or anyone that is any fun is somehow ethically suspect, and anyone who is ethically impeccable is somehow not any fun." End quote. They are also entertainingly grumpy and are a vague, culturally disenfranchised demographic, according to them. Another category is the so-called Hornby set, described as, quote, "indirect descendants of ban the bomb, bra-burning parents. They buy Abyssinian flatbread, fresh hummus, and Rioja for an anti-war picnic. They want to make trade fair and cancel third world debt, but also have a Polish cleaner." End quote. One difference between the two classification systems we've discussed is that the NRS social grade system is based on employment, while the Class of 2004 report is based also on tastes. Both systems come from the advertising industry needing to categorise people as target markets for whatever commodities they're selling. Particular groups can have particular products pitched to them. Groups within what they define as the middle class are of most interest, as they have more disposable income to buy things with. A consequence of this outlook has been to reinforce perceptions that a middle class is separate to the working class. So I'd say that, yeah, the advertising industry has been sort of influential in the sort of common perception of the middle class. Just one factor among many, of course. But you don't have to wait to be asked to take part in market research in order to find out which invented class subdivision you can be reduced to. Since the NRS social grade system and the Class of 2004 report came out, there have sprung up plenty of websites which can tell you your class classification after a few clicks. These are quick multiple choice quizzes with varying tones of seriousness. A recent quiz can be found on the New Statesman magazine's website from January 2022. Going through its questions, you find out what proportion of each class you have inside you. Questions include, do you go on skiing holidays? Do you have private insurance? What kind of supermarket you use, and how much you use public transport? The answer given for each one nudges you along a scale as to how much you belong in each class. I came out as 51.2% working class, 34.3% middle class, and 14.5% upper class. And I'd really like to know where the upper class part of me is in particular. How your answers supposedly correspond to a class were based on some research commissioned by the New Statesman. This took a sample of the British public and asked them what class they associate with particular activities. For the purposes of the online quiz, only data on what people said about lifestyles was included, taking out data about particular jobs supposedly corresponding to a class. So the data used to decide our class from our answers to the online quiz is based on people's perceptions rather than anything more substantial, such as, you know, correlating people's pay with the likelihood that they go on skiing holidays, for example. This means that the results are only meaningful to the extent that aspects of your lifestyle are perceived to relate to a particular class. In 2016, left-leaning, youth-orientated American media factory BuzzFeed put together a quiz called What Percentage Middle Class Are You? This quiz was more tongue-in-cheek, but still used the same kind of class indicators as the New Statesman one. Questions included, when did you last eat quinoa? And I think pronouncing it that way means that I'm middle class. Another question was, choose a trousers and socks combination with options like jeans and black socks and chinos and no socks. And another question was whether or not you consider Claire Balding to be posh. And I came out as 44% middle class, according to this particular quiz. In 2017, Joe, an Irish-based social media publisher aimed at young people, started running their What Social Class Are You quiz. This included questions on whether you say breakfast, lunch and dinner, or breakfast, dinner and tea, which I always thought was more of a north-south thing than a class issue, and whether you're more likely to eat at Nando's or Wagamama's. And I came out of this one as lower middle class. But the point of these quizzes is really to take you to websites which are clogged up with adverts. And I wouldn't be surprised if the answers given contribute to some sort of creepy, sinister algorithm which matches up what you reply with to what adverts you're subsequently targeted with. I'm expected to start seeing adverts for quinoa and socks crop up whenever I venture onto the internet. Another survey is called the Great British Class Calculator and was put together in 2013 following research from several universities into the definition of class. This was described as the largest ever study of class in the UK, so it can be expected to be a bit more substantial than whatever data the other online quizzes were based on. The researchers behind the Great British Class Calculator argued that definitions of upper, middle and working class are outdated because of modern occupations and lifestyles. They instead suggested seven alternatives, ranging from the elite at 6% of the population to the precariat at 15% of the population. The precariat would have been people who've been on 0 hours contracts, cash in hand work, unstable and unreliable employment. Our usual understanding of the middle class was divided into two categories, the established and the technical middle class. The established middle class makes up 25% of the population. They tend to live outside urban areas, quote, enjoy a diverse range of cultural activities, end quote, and work in management or traditional professions. The technical middle class is only 6% of the population and live in suburbia, use social media and most likely work in research or the sciences. The survey also gave an average age of members of each class, indicating that people gradually move up the class ladder as they get older, unless they get stuck. And people tend to get stuck in the technical middle class, traditional working class, or precariat positions. And when this talk was given at summer school, this is where we went through the Great British Class Calculator on the website, which is still available. It's on the BBC website. And the way you do it is when you answer the questions, it nudges you up and down a particular scale. And I think collectively, you know, with different answers being shouted out and inputted into the survey, the result was that the audience was collectively established middle class. There you go. That's told us. The survey had three sections: economic, social, and cultural. And questions within them concern things like income, whether you own or rent a property, and what cultural interests you have. The social section asks you to tick off from a list of professions if you know people who work in them socially. Ticking the box for office manager means that you score points for knowing people on that level, while if you socialise with a call centre worker, you lose points, which sounds a bit harsh to me. What this is saying is that we're likely to associate with people who do jobs of a similar status to ourselves, and our status can be gleaned through that. And statistically, it may be true that we associate people who do similar jobs, and it also shows us how society pushes us into particular groups. Of course, office managers can socialise with call centre workers, but I expect the lack of time and money many people have for a social life explains why we're more likely to hang out with those we're more similar to. And more, you know, generally, like attracts like, you know, regardless of class. Bringing class into it seems to go off in a different direction. This survey, like some of the others, partly defined middle classness by tastes in culture. Activities in this quiz, which were associated with different classes, included whether you use social media or visit stately homes or listen to jazz. Going to the opera, unsurprisingly, is seen as a middle-class activity, while playing video games is judged as having less cultural capital. And as we've already seen earlier in this talk, to some extent, tastes are shaped by income, as we can only get involved with whatever activities we can afford to. But in other aspects, our interests aren't dictated by our wealth, as these days anyone with a smartphone has access to any type of music or videos they want to be entertained by, from Beyoncé to Bach. And if we can afford a ticket, whether we choose to buy one for a football match or to watch a play, depends largely on our social circles and upbringing. So the Great British Class Calculator and the other surveys are on shaky ground when they try to define class according to social lives and cultural interests. It's too narrow to assume that there's a tight correlation between wealth and particular lifestyles, although it could be said that the more wealth we have, the more choice we have of what lifestyle to lead, and the more money we're likely to spend. The particular lifestyles we choose are linked to who we are around and the culture we live in, rather than our employment status. For this reason, lifestyle isn't a robust indicator of class. As we've seen, invoking lifestyle as a component of class muddies the water because it leads to inventing more categories, which have been, you know, for the benefit of marketing. So we shouldn't rely, we shouldn't place too much worth on these surveys and what they tell us. Any of them which rely on perceptions of class and lazy stereotypes don't have much weight, as they aren't grounded in economic realities. The framework for defining class which they use floats around, drifting according to changing fashions. The categories invented for the Class of 2004 report already sound quite dated. The surveys whose outcomes are derived from more grounded research, you know, like the Great British Class Calculator, they're no doubt useful to sociologists and psychologists, as well as advertisers but less so to economists. From a socialist point of view, they're a distraction from recognising that there are fundamental shared economic interests between the varyingly defined groups. If someone didn't want to rely on these slightly gimmicky, slightly unsettling, slightly patronising online surveys to tell them what class they're in, how would they determine what class they belong to? Well, they could read some socialist literature, of course, but not enough people do that. Even without being particularly politically aware, nearly everyone will recognise that they're not a member of the elite. So their answer to what class they're in is likely to hinge on whether or not they believe there's a distinct middle class and if they see themselves in it. And that belief has been influenced by the marketing industry. To what extent is whether someone sees themselves as middle class or not based on old-fashioned snobbery? It could be assumed that some people might prefer to call themselves middle class to differentiate themselves from people they judge to be unsuccessful or unsophisticated. This might be hard to determine, as no one's going to admit to being a snob, even with the anonymity of an online quiz. But it doesn't seem like this is a widespread viewpoint. As I've already mentioned, research has shown that people are more likely to define themselves as working class, even if their circumstances fit in with traditional definitions of middle class. Indeed, some people may be reluctant to call themselves middle class, as this has connotations of being pretentious and smug. The subtypes of middle classness made up for the Class of 2004 report didn't sound like much to aspire to. So, despite how the notion of an ever-divisible middle class has become popularised, many people still recognise themselves as working class. The ongoing cost of living crisis has probably encouraged this, as people whose income was previously comfortable enough have been reminded that the economy can turn on them too. Even more now than in the past, having a reasonable or higher income doesn't place someone in the middle between the poorest and the capitalist class. The so-called middle class isn't in the middle at all. Thank you very much for listening. Cheerio.